This is the Kids with Dave Burba with Bird Migration from Songs for Teaching right here on the Children's Hour.
Some birds need to take a long vacation. They flock to someplace warm when it gets cold. Another home to find some yummy bird food. This is called migration, now you know. Think about the big gray goose in Canada. It stays up there as long as it is nice. Before the winter, he flies down to Mexico so his wings won't get as cold as ice. Some birds need to take a long vacation. They flock to someplace warm when it gets cold. Another home to find some yummy bird food. This is called migration, now you know. The hummingbird spends their summer in mountain high, but in the fall the flowers they all fade. So they find their way down to the valley below, where warm winds make their nectar once again.
Listening to the Children's Hour, and today we're learning about migration with our guest, Scott Wiedensahl. He's the author of A World on the Wing, The Global Odyssey of Migratory Birds.
How do you even monitor migration?
You know, electronics have gotten smaller and smaller and lighter and more powerful. And there's whole new generations of tiny, tiny little transmitters. I mean, some of them small enough not just to put on the smallest birds like hummingbirds, but actually to put on migratory insects like butterflies and bumblebees. They're called nanopins. They weigh like 1/400th of an ounce. Insanely small. There's something called the MOTUS Wildlife Tracking System, M-O-T-U-S, which uses automated receivers all across the world to track these tags. And you can go to the MOTUS website, motus.org, and all the tracking data for like 54,000 birds, bats, and insects that have been tracked with MOTUS is on there, and you can look it up and map it and see where these animals are going.
That is so cool. We've put a link at childrenshour.org. Look for this episode, Migration.
What is the furthest migrating bird?
Well, the longest nonstop migration that we know of by a land bird is bar-tailed godwit, at 8,100 miles across the Pacific Ocean. Arctic terns, these beautiful white seabirds that nest on the coast of Maine, they'll travel 61,000 miles in the course of a single migration. They're not doing that at one shot. They're feeding on fish and squid and other marine animals. They can rest on things that are floating in the water. They can learn certain stopover points, basically like their restaurant and hotel room, places where they can stop and rest that are safe and have a lot of food. And they have to hit a lot of these stopover points on a long migration.
How don't the birds get tired when they're flying?
Most of the birds that fly long distances, they're built for it. They have these really aerodynamic wings that allow them to travel very quickly and without expending a great deal of energy. Birds have these powerful muscles in their chest, pectoral muscles, that power their wings. Have you ever seen a wishbone on a chicken or a turkey? In the bird, that acts like a spring. It's called the furcula. And when the bird pushes its wings down, it presses that bone together. And it's like putting pressure on a spring. When it releases, it helps pull the wings up. So it's actually got this kind of internal spring system. That furcula helps store energy and release energy with every wing beat. Also, birds have hollow bones, so their bodies are really light. Birds don't weigh nearly as much as you think they probably do just to look at them, because they're mostly feathers. So it doesn't take as much energy to keep them aloft. They're also super efficient at burning energy. A lot of birds eat almost their weight in food every day, and they need to do that just to stay alive because they're burning so much energy. Migratory birds really only put on fat during the migratory season. If you find a migratory bird in the summertime, it's not going to have any fat at all. They put on sometimes huge amounts of fat. I keep going back to those bar-tailed godwits because they're like the most extreme bird. Before they're ready to take off and fly across the Pacific Ocean, half of their weight is fat. They feel like a water balloon when you pick them up. They jiggle when they walk. They have so much fat. By the time they land in New Zealand, they've burned up all their fat. In many cases, they've actually burned up some of their muscle tissue. They actually cannibalize their muscle tissue to get through.
That's the voice of Scott Wiedensahl. He's the author of A World on the Wing, The Global Odyssey of Migratory Birds. In the background, we're hearing the bar-tailed godwit, recorded in New Zealand. These are the birds that migrate over 8,000 miles all in one shot. Incredible. Learn more with us at childrenshour.org. Look for this episode, Migration. This is Heather Feather from Songs for Growing.
And geese, no winter's coming soon. Yes, the birds and geese, no winter's coming soon. Oh, there are less bugs to eat and less worms for a treat. And so the birds fly south for the winter. The birds say, fly away, we've got to fly away. It's getting cold, we can't find food, we cannot stay. We've got to fly away, fly south and fly away. You'll see us back again some warm spring day. No winter's coming soon. Yes, those butterflies, no winter's coming soon. When the flowers start to die, the nectar's gone, it's time to fly. And monarchs make their way to Mexico. And they say, fly away, we've got to fly away. Summer's day. Okay, let's be birds. Hear the wings? Flying up, circling in the sky. Now let's fly down. Next, butterflies. Hear the little wings? Start heading south. Now we're gonna be sea turtles. That's it, we're swimming. Good job. Okay, change currents. Got it. Okay, let's continue heading south. Did you know that turtles have amazing GPS? They have their babies in coastal areas, and then they take currents far away, and they come back and have babies the same place year after year.
The turtles know the season's changing soon. Yes, the turtles know the season's changing soon. family, and they have their babies back where they were born. Sea turtles swim away, sea turtles swim away. The turtles swim around the world, they swim all day. Sea turtles swim away, sea turtles swim away. You'll see them back again another day.
America don't carol. How they look in pictures, well, maybe sparrows. The coot is vain, so's the black cap titmouse. Creeping warblers complain, but not like the screech owl. If they'd been alive to see themselves drawn, what would they have to say about John James Audubon? Other creatures would be flattered to see themselves in books, postcards, and calendars. But birds are fickle, fancy fellows. A canary will take you to court over a shade of yellow. If they've been allowed to critique his work, would his name still be synonymous with birds? Gray-crowned purple finch take offense? Or the least peewee flycatcher be incensed? Can't you see Bonaparte's gull there winged to his breast? We've all seen vireos and bobolinks bothered by less. Never a man to hunt birds for sport. Audubon still ate some birds of America after he finished up their portraits.
That was the Deedle Deedle Dees right here on the Children's Hour from Strange Dees Indeed with Birds of America Don't Care, Oh. We're learning about migration today on the Children's Hour with Scott Widensall. He's been a naturalist and lover of birds following their migration, fascinated by it all of his life. You can learn a lot more about him in his book, World on the Wing, The Global Odyssey of Migratory Birds, as well as some of the latest cutting-edge research about migration. But first, Scott, I wanted to ask you, are birds migrating all the time, or is it just like sometimes?
Most migration takes place in the spring and the fall, and most migration takes place at night. Even birds that are usually active in the daytime migrate after dark. The air is cooler, it's calmer, there are fewer predators. So they'll take off just after dark and they'll fly high overhead. They make what are called nocturnal flight calls. Nocturnal means after dark. They don't sound like the songs that they sing during the breeding season. They're not beautiful, long melodies. They're these little short, almost like anti-collision warnings, because sometimes there are so many millions of birds flying in the night sky that there's a chance they could actually fly into each other if they didn't hear each other up there. A lot of nights, it's hundreds of millions of birds flying over New Mexico and the whole rest of the lower 48.
I love that. Coming up on the Children's Hour in a little bit, you're going to hear from Bird Note, and you will hear some of those incredible songs that have been recorded while birds are migrating at night. Let's go over to Amaya.
How do they know where they're going, and how do they end up there every single time?
This is one of the real amazing things about birds. Most birds come out of the egg with a genetically coded set of instructions, basically baked into their DNA, that will tell them they have to fly in a certain direction at a certain time of the year for a certain length of time. So that gives them the sense of where they need to go. But finding their way there, birds have a whole series of cues that they can use to figure out where they are and what direction they're going. They look up at the stars. Now, they're not looking at the constellations. Does anybody know what's the one star that all the old ancient mariners looked at? What's the most important one?
The North Star.
The North Star, which is Polaris, right. Have you ever seen a time-lapse photograph of the night sky? All the stars are kind of swirling around Polaris. Polaris doesn't move, but everything else does because the Earth rotates. The stars don't move. Obviously, we're the ones that are moving, but it looks like the stars are moving. The birds can see that. They can look up at the night sky and see what part of the night sky is not moving. So that tells them north, south, east, and west. Some nights it's cloudy and you can't see the night sky, but that's okay because birds have backup after backup after backup after backup. One of the things that birds can use is the Earth's magnetic field.
So the Earth has a magnetic core. How does the magnetic field of the Earth work that they can feel it on the outside of the planet?
Well, here's the crazy thing. It's not that they can feel it. They actually can see it.
What?
And this is something that we just figured out in the last 15, 20 years. Scientists have known for a long, long time that birds can sense the Earth's magnetic field because if you tape a little magnet to their head, they lose their ability to navigate, to orient magnetically. And this is where it gets really weird. There is something called quantum entanglement. And essentially, there is a pigment in the eye of the bird. It's a protein called cryptochrome. And there's tons of this cryptochrome in the retina, in the back of the eyes of migratory birds. And as they're flying through the night sky and light from distant stars is entering their eyes, it's striking these cryptochrome pigments and it's magnetizing them. And it's allowing them to see the Earth's magnetic field, these big arcing bands of magnetic radiation that radiate out from, as Katie said, the Earth's molten iron magnetic core. It's telling the birds, you're going away from the equator toward the poles, or you're going away from the poles toward the equator. So it works in both hemispheres. We don't know what it looks like. I would like to think it's like spectacular like the Northern Lights, but it may just be a smudge in the bird's eye that it can see the angle of the Earth's magnetic field. But man, I would give almost anything to be able to talk to a bird and ask, what does the Earth's magnetic field look like?
That's Scott Wiedensahl. He's the author of a few different books, including The World on the Wing, The Global Odyssey of Migratory Birds. We've posted links and other information at childrenshour.org. Look for this episode, Migration. Coming up, we're going to hear from Bird Note with some beautiful sounds of migrating birds at night. And we've got more with our guest, Scott Wiedensahl. Stick with us. This is the Children's Hour.
Pisempe mute taka kita kwan pese sakne kamo wa taka kena kwan utaski kawa patama pisempe mute taka kita kwan pe se sakne kamo wa hao.
Randall Paskman with Beautiful Bird.
You're listening to Children's Hour, Kids Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Many thanks to the Outpost Performance Space for hosting the Children's Hour. The Children's Hour is supported by United Way of North Central New Mexico. Support for the Children's Hour provided by New Mexico Arts, a division of the New Mexico Department of Cultural Affairs, and by the National Endowment for the Arts. Support for the Children's Hour provided by the City of Albuquerque Cultural Services Department and the Urban Enhancement Trust Fund. You can keep up with the Children's Hour by subscribing to our monthly newsletter at childrenshour.org. Teachers, we have learning guides for many of our episodes, and they meet and cite curriculum standards around the nation. You can find them all at childrenshour.org.